Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Bold Expressions. Today I have a special guest with me. I have John from, was it Brainstorm Games and Comics?
Brainstorm Comics and Gaming in Frederick, Maryland and Walkersville, Maryland.
All right. So why don't you tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
So I've been collecting comics since 1992. Death of Superman actually got me into comics. I know a lot of people kind of look down on that storyline. It's kind of like the slide of comics during the 90s. But I was one of the ones who stayed. I became really interested in it because of that. I started coming to Brainstorm Comics as a customer in 94, I believe. And after I graduated college, I started working for the owner. I stayed there for 12 years. And I went into banking for 6 years, 7 years, and then he was ready to retire, and I bought the store from him.
Okay, cool. So this is your, you know, effectively your store. This is your, yeah, your business. Okay, that's cool. Thankfully, do you think working in banking or whatever, do you think that prepared you any for running a business?
So, I mean, it definitely helped me realize a bunch of things that were necessary. I was in the mortgage industry side of the industry, so loan applications and things like that, definitely what you need in order to get a loan, all that fun stuff was definitely helped out.
Okay, yeah, because I could just, you know, luckily for that, because you just having a love of comics, you may get into it for the comics, but then get hit with all the other stuff that you don't think about with running an actual business in at a brick and mortar location.
Exactly.
So what are some things that you that kind of caught you off guard that you didn't realize that you needed to know running the business?
So thankfully not much did. When I worked for the previous owner, I did pretty much everything outside of writing the checks, and I did the ordering, I did customer interaction, I did all the stuff that you would need to do. Obviously he paid for the lease and the books and everything, but like I said, I did probably 90%, 85% of the stuff that an owner would have done at that point. So
okay, so you pretty much were effectively,
I was like a manager.
Kind of tutor, yeah. So manager, you know, store manager and store owner. So you were pretty much ready for it by the time you actually did it.
Yeah, and working as an employee, it helped me recognize the things that I liked of what he did and the things I wanted to change. And that's not to say what he was doing was wrong. It's just everybody has their own way of doing things. So I just saw things that I thought would have appealed to another group of people.
Gotcha. So what are some things that you see change as far as the comic industry versus when you were going there to now owning the store?
I think that there's more diversity in terms of the clientele. I think there's more diversity in terms of the stories. Back in the 90s, there was still definitely that cliche of like a closed comic book shop. And what I mean by that is if you weren't part of the normal crowd, they would look down on you if you didn't know what was going on in every single book or know the history of characters. They would kind of look down on you. I will say that's one of the things that appealed to me about Brainstorm and Dan Webb, the previous owner, was he always wanted people to feel comfortable in the store and make it more of like a family or community atmosphere. And I feel like comic shops are finally catching on to that, you know, in the more recent years, because that's what separates you from places that, you know, I mean, there's a lot of online places that you can order from. But that experience of coming into a store can't be matched by Amazon or DBCS or any of the other online places where you get like graphic novels or individual issues. Like I said, the fact that they're doing more characters with different backgrounds also, that's definitely a good part of the industry that has changed. It's definitely bringing in more people that way and making them feel more comfortable in a comic book shop setting.
That's I can attest to that, especially, well, feeling comfortable. I remember I was always interested in comics. I didn't actually start going into maybe like, let's say high school, maybe college. And I remember, when was it? I was picking up a lot of Ultimate Spider-Man at that time.
Okay.
Just like
around 2000.
Yeah, the trades. Yeah, it was early 2000s. And you know what? It had to be around the time of Planet Hulk. I think that storyline had just recently wrapped up. And I remember talking to the, and I don't put this on the, on the shop owner, but just some of the people there. I was talking to the shop owner. He was cool. And I was asking just a question, because I, you know, there wasn't as many YouTube channels about comics. There wasn't as many podcasts talking about comics. So, you know, if you weren't, you know, just really plugged into it, you really don't know anything about the stories. And so I asked the question. I was like, oh, so is he the Hulk the whole time? Like, wondering, like, you know, because he's on this hostile planet. I'm like, so is he changing back and forth? Like, is he the Hulk the whole time? And, like, some customers just like, no, he made some joke, you know, I guess, like, kind of saying how stupid I was. And he said some random name. And I just kind of looked at the guy. I was like, you didn't even understand the question I was asking. It's like, and plus, it's like, I know who the Hulk is. But the question is, if he's in this environment, like, is he the Hulk and he changed back into Banner? It's like, that's the question I was asking. It's like, but that, you know, people don't realize how, I guess, gatekeeping or whatever, or just that attitude kind of keeps people from wanting to learn more because, you know.
So I've always been a person that if I love something, I want to share it with other people. I want them to enjoy it as well. That's one of the things that I preach to my employees is like, hey, if you love it, let other people share in it also. Don't try and keep them away from it. A couple years ago, we were interviewed by the local newspaper here, and we were asked whether the movies helped benefit selling the books or not.
And, I was about to ask that.
And they interviewed another comic book shop as well, and the other comic book shop was, no, those people never buy anything. They just, you know, whatever. And we've had a totally different experience. For us, we feel if you start talking to those people who are exposed to it initially by the movies, you can find things that will speak to them on that same level. There's a story out there that is probably similar to it. There's so much variety out there. You can definitely find something that will speak to them on the same level that the movie did. But that's the thing. You have to put in the work and not just be like, well, why didn't they find what they were looking for? Like, this is a very dense field in terms of like how much is out there, and it's intimidating to people, and you have to make them feel welcome. You always have to teach them like it's a language. Like with a language, you know, at first you stumble through your sentences and your words, like the pronunciation and everything, but the more you hang around in the shop, you pick it up naturally. Sorry, I had a phone call, I had to decline there. So when you delve into it and you hang around it. So when I got into collecting, it was far different. You didn't have Wikipedia. You didn't have like the YouTube channels that you were talking about. You didn't have any of that stuff. You had to dive in and pick it up by just gathering context from what you were reading. And maybe you found somebody who knew a little bit more than you and was, it would help you along. But for the most part, it was just dive in and sink or swim kind of. Some people find that a little strange because there's still somewhat of a stigma attached to it, that it's more targeted towards younger readers or kids and they expect it to come naturally. But there is a whole history to it. And like, it takes a while to get your grasp on it.
Do you find that, especially like, because I know, I don't know, I don't say I know a lot, but I know enough general stuff. And whenever I'm explaining things to friends or whenever on explaining stuff to my wife on long trips, you know, I try to, and I mess around and I get in the habit of, there's so much history in comics that you start explaining stuff and then you come to something and I'll have a question about that and it's like, well, that's a whole another rabbit hole. And do you ever find that you're explaining something? It's like, okay, well, the Green Lanterns and they do this. It's like, well, why do they do this? It's like, well, actually, that didn't used to be the case, but they changed that, and that goes back to this. It's like, do you ever find yourself going down those deep rabbit holes, and how do you,
So, one of the things that I've learned, the best way to approach it is keep it as simple as possible. And because again, part of the charm of comics and part of the appeal of comics is the experiencing it yourself. If you explain too much, you're almost robbing them of some of the experiences. So I'm going to relate it to something else. And I don't know whether you play Magic the Gathering or whether you know what Magic the Gathering is.
I'm familiar with it's a game, but no, I haven't
Okay.
played it.
So it's a game, and whenever hardcore people teach other people magic, they want to tell them everything about the game. And unfortunately, it's because of their enthusiasm, which is a good thing, but you're overwhelming the person with too much information. So it's best to just boil it down to the best points and the best selling points, and like I said, then let them experience it themselves through the actual stories and such. So I've learned over the years to kind of pull back how much I tell about like the different things. So.
I've tried to do better doing that, especially with certain things, try to narrow the focus on what it is I'm talking about. I've noticed that for some things, it's easier to talk about things with Marvel as opposed to DC, because DC has so many continuities that they don't even keep up with.
Yes. So you have to explain to them like before 1986, like it was the Wild Wild West, and then it got better, and then it got worse, and then so yes.
It's like, yeah, explain why there's been so many Supergirls.
Yes.
But yeah, so I've gotten better with that. And
So it's
it's
The same thing as when you tell your friend about a movie. You don't tell them every plot point. You tell
right.
them what they, you
The
know,
beats.
why they might enjoy it. Yes.
Yeah. There is one channel that I watch, Comic Pop, to where they have a main show called Back Issues, to where the main guy Sal, he has his, it'll be either his two friends or one of his friends and his wife, or sometimes his wife will be the one telling the story, and they'll have a trade or a series of, you know, issues, whatever. Mostly it's an event, you know, it's you know, about two, three issues, whatever. And he'll go over the comic, and for the most part, they don't know about it. So he will just give beat by beat, and you know, sometimes we'll reference other stories that they've covered. Some stuff they cover, you know, it's not going to be in sequential issues. So sometimes they'll cover an event, and then later down the line, they'll cover something that came before that other event, but it's something they can go to, and you know, it's good by that, because he doesn't, as you said, he doesn't go beat by beat through the comic. He does go through whatever everything, and then you know, encourage you to buy the story, the book yourself, later on.
Yeah, so like I
So,
said, you don't want to rob them of that experience of doing it themselves. So.
I know my wife, because I've recently started buying a lot digital lately. I have a lot of them, physically. I actually have a couple by me right now that I have to put up. My son gets into them, but he is at the moment where he's very rough on books and whatnot. He's already ripped a couple of pages. One, he destroyed one of my Teen Titans books to the point I don't know. I just remember coming home from work and I just saw like the cover and everything. I'm like, well, what happened to the book? What happened to the rest of it? And she's like, I don't know. And I was just like, I don't even know where he did it. We've rearranged everything so much that I don't know where he could have hid it. So that's just, it's in the ether now. So I may have to pick that back up digitally or whatnot, but.
How old is he?
He is, he's 8 right now, but he's on the, he's on the spectrum. So something he's, you know, he doesn't really understand the concept of being gentle with certain things. So still waiting on him to kind of pick that up. But yeah, he is.
So I don't, so I take books home to my son all the time and I know he's going to destroy them. And I don't know. For me, I just want him to get used to having a book in his hands right now. And that's kind of where I am with things. So but yeah. I understand, like, if it's your personal one, how that could be a little bit more devastating.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my only thing. Cause it's like, I spent money on this and I don't want to just have them destroyed. There's certain, because I didn't like that book, but there's certain ones, like I have, I think there's some other Superman book that he went through, but I have like some Young Avengers books. I'm like, okay, I really like these books. You are not touching these. So gotcha. I will probably, you know, like I said, I've bought a lot more books. I think at this point, I definitely have a lot more digital than I do physical. So I may, you know, if I finally break down and get a Kindle or some other type of tablet and have him go through, you know, maybe help him enjoy it like that. What do you...
A big change. And that's a big change in the industry is people are definitely digesting books through digital instead of just the physical medium.
Sorry.
Oh, you're fine.
Pop-up notification that shouldn't have came up. But yeah, so what is your preference? Do you prefer the physical or digital?
So me personally, I feel like I remember things better with an actual physical book. Mm-hmm. I feel like the experience is different. But I'm also older. I'm 46. I'm closing in on 50. So like digital is still relatively a small portion of my life versus like the younger readers. But I don't know. Like I said, I still prefer. I tried. I love novels also, and I bought both a Kindle and a Nook when they first came out, and I just couldn't do it. I was hoping I could, because I like the idea of being able to carry 1,000 books with you around at all times, but all
right.
It was a different experience. I couldn't get into it. I still use my Kindle and Nook more to download like the first chapter of a book to see whether I like it, and then I buy it if I like it.
Okay. I know recently, I don't know if you were into the whole circus with the Comixology.
I know people were very agitated with it.
Yeah, because they had something that worked great that both Marvel and DC used for their own apps as well.
Yeah.
And it read perfectly, but then they finally merged completely, you know, with Amazon, you know. And just the reading experience is just, it's not the same. As they used to have what's called guided view, to where it would have a nice transition, so that you wouldn't have, unless you wanted to, so that you're not constantly turning your phone, depending on the.
Well, I heard the zooming in was different, and the
yes,
the whole layout was.
That was different, and then it was at the point the laptop experience was totally different from handheld. They had one, I think they finally changed it, but they had one section to where it was had two pages on the screen, and on one page it would show whatever panel you were on, while the next page still had the next page that was coming up. And it's like, it's visually distracting.
Yes.
You know, because you're trying to focus on one and you're looking for the other. But yeah, I kind of do miss the physical, because I enjoy art and just kind of having that art in your hand and, you know, the full size. So I do kind of miss that. But as you said, like a lot of comics that some of the comics I still have is at my mom's house when I stayed there for a while.
Sorry,
Hello.
my son visited.
No, that's fine.
Mom, say hi.
All right. Yeah, mine just happens to be upstairs right now, thankfully.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, so just being able to have all of them, you know, as you said before, you know, all of them in your pocket, you know, should you want to take it out and read it at the moment. So, and also not need a
Investor.
you don't need a
This is
what am I
recording.
thinking about? Internet access, because you can have it download to your device, so that's helpful as well.
So, I mean, they've also done studies where they've said like touch and smell affect memory. So I think the impact of a physical book is different than a digital copy, because your laptop or your cell phone always have the same smell and same feel, whereas like a comic book is different.
Yeah, the feel of the physical feel of holding the paper and different things like that. I was, if all things considered, if I had unlimited space and I can be ensured that it would hold up, I probably would get more physicals, but it's also the digital is a lot easier for me to get to.
Well, I mean, I understand why 18 to 25-year-olds also are has more appeal for them, because a lot of them are more transitory. They want to move around. They want to they have a different life experience than those who have collected in a while or like for a longer period of time. And I mean, it's not a wrong way to collect. It's just a different way to collect. So.
So what do you, I'm sorry. So, okay. So you said that you didn't experience the thing of when the movies, MCU and before that and everything happened, you guys did get more people coming into the shop wanting to know, about stories and about the characters and what have you.
Yes.
So you feel like, but do you feel like that, even though that you didn't have the issue, do you feel like that there is more that Marvel and DC could have done to get people into the stores to
So I say this all the time in terms of what I feel Marvel and DC are missing. And that is, to me, at the beginning of every movie, they should have the lead actor of whatever the movie is come out in character and be like, let's say Captain America, and be like, do you love the adventures of Captain America? Well, you don't have to wait 3 years for the next one. You can get my adventures every week. And then have like the comic book shop locator website listed at the bottom and get people to find their local comic book shops that way. And with all the TV shows and the movies and everything, I feel like they're missing opportunities after opportunities. When I was a kid, I remember watching G.I. Joe, and they would run the Marvel G.I. Joe commercials like for the comic books all the time. And I feel like they don't do that anymore. I feel like it's a missed opportunity.
Yeah, you would think that they don't own the characters as if they don't own the rights to this. And so it's, yeah, it is definitely. Did you feel that that's because that some of the people who make the movies don't view the comics as legit media, or they don't take them as seriously? Do you think there's a disconnect between those two worlds?
So, this is going to sound a little pessimistic. I don't mean it to sound pessimistic, but I think that they probably view physical media as a dying thing. And I don't think it's accurate. And the reason I don't think it's accurate is if you look at Scholastic's numbers, Scholastic trounces every major comic book producer in terms of graphic novels sold. And the argument is like, oh, well, they sell them to schools. And I'm like, cool. Why aren't you guys selling them to schools? Why aren't you guys like getting in on that?
Legit, no lie, I have two comics. My wife worked at as a librarian for a few years at a school that she worked at, a charter school. I bought two from the Scholastic school drive. It was the Miles Morales comic I just had and a Green Lantern Secret Origins book because they had it there. Mm-hmm. That's the only reason I was like, you know, they had all those books there. I was like, oh, they have comics. Order those two for me. And you're right. If you produce it to them, they'll be like, oh, I can get these.
Dogman sells millions of copies. There's no way that Batman can't sell to the same kids. There's no way Superman can't sell to those same kids. There's no way that Spider-Man can't sell to those same kids. They're writing off a whole segment for no reason, and it boggles my mind. And I wouldn't make any money off that because it's through Scholastic, but it's good for the industry. So it boggles my mind as to why they don't do it.
Yeah, because even if they have it for the school, there's only so much that they can carry there and some that they probably wouldn't because it's more mature stories. So then that's when they would come to you to find a greater, you know, array of whatever and get into some other stuff potentially. Yeah,
you could throw one page into each one of them, again, advertising like, hey, the comic book shop locator, you know, find your local comic book shop for more adventures of Miles or Spider-Gwen or whoever.
I've gotten a few superhero DVDs. I've only gotten, only two of them have been, I guess, smart enough to put comics in them. One was, I want to say it was Days of Future Past. They put the actual story in there, like just a small comic, you know, kind of like a magazine size, whatever, like, you know, Archie Digest size of it. And I want to say that one had the Days of Future Past story, and I want to say some other stuff. And then I had, I don't know if it's, I guess it was Batman Begins, because that had something else in it, another, you know, a Batman comic or what have you in it. And yeah, it would make sense if they would do that more with, you know, home releases or whatever. I remember they would do that more in video games. I remember, I don't know if you remember this game, Marvel Imperfects. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I remember you played through that, the story mode or whatever. It was a fighting game. It was actually pretty cool. And when you unlock stuff, you can actually unlock issues of books that you can look for later on. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Because, you know, it's not just, oh, here's a comic cover. It's like, no, it's a book you can actually go through.
Yep.
And it's one of those things. It's like they already bought the game. Like, just give them this and it'll encourage them to go find some more.
So all these companies outside of comic books preach synergy between the different branches. But for some reason, it seems like comic books just miss every opportunity for it. And honestly, even like you were talking about for the DVD, you don't even have to include a physical copy. You can include a digital copy.
Yeah.
Like, so you don't even have to bother with the printing aspect of it. You can try and get people to log on to your digital side.
Yeah. The only, and the funny thing about that is that they are, is synergetic a word?
Synergistic?
Synergistic. They do practice that with everything but the print media. Mm-hmm. As you'll see, I don't know how much you've seen any of the animated shows, but they had Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes, which was a great show that, from what I can tell, everybody loved. It was a great distillation of all the old school stuff, but still kind of modernizing it, but not too much. It like legit had, it was almost like the legit like history of Marvel, it started off with the Avengers assembling Iron Man, Hulk, Thor, Ant-Man, Wasp. They go through like the first, there's like first three or four episodes, whatever. Hulk gets mad. They have a fight. He leaves. They find Cap. And then it's like they, it's like kind of literally going through that. And it's, they do justice by Hawkeye. He's a pretty cool character. And Black Panther joins. It's a really good show. But then once the MCU really gets started, they cancel that and then have a show that features the Avengers from the first movie. Mm-hmm. And a Falcon version, and then you can kind of see different things that they go. There's like, okay, well, this is in a movie, so we're gonna have this character, and it's gonna resemble the movie. And then you can see, because you know animation takes so long, you can see, you can tell later on that they made changes in the movies. It's like, okay, so we have to have this character kind of look the way that they would look in the movie, and they do it with games and different things, but it never makes that transition from that to the comics.
So I don't know if you remember in the early 2000s when the first Spider-Man movie came out, comics changed it to where Peter Parker is organic.
Right.
And people hated that.
Oh, God. I hated it in the movie.
And people were like, he's supposed to be a genius. And they're like, what kind of 14-year-old or 15-year-old could do this? And it's like, well, it's comics. Like,
right.
They can't swing through the city either. But, right. You know.
Yeah, it's like, because, yeah, it is one of those things. It's like, well, yeah, why wouldn't it just come out of his body? It's just like, okay, well, if that's the case, why does it come out of his wrist?
Yeah.
It's like, why does it come out of his wrist? It's like, how does he figure it out, the different types of web to use when he's doing that? With the answer with the comics is that, you know, well, he figures out different ways, the pressure points, the different things to do all that. It's like, there's two... There is a thing when trying to explain certain things, it kind of breaks it down. Like the thing with the little hairs on his finger. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, yeah, it's like, well, that's how he sticks himself. It's like, okay, well, what about his back?
Yeah.
Or like, what about when he's wearing shoes?
Yeah. Well, like I said, people were very, I still remember very distinctly, like people coming in and complaining about the organic web shooters.
It was, yeah. I was happy when they turned it back.
Yes. I think the overwhelming majority were.
Yeah. But no, I could tell even reading Ultimate Spider-Man, even though, you know, it was of course after the fact because I'm buying the trades. Doc Ock, you know, in there does look, you know, at some point there's the Go in Hollywood issue to where they're filming a Spider-Man movie, and I want to say like Tobey Maguire is there, and they you know pretty much are talking about the movie, and you know stuff like that is funny. I'm trying to think. Do you see much? I want to say interaction. Do you see much? I guess synergy like that as far as DC. The only thing I can think of is them adding the Tumblr as one of Batman's mini Batmobiles. Like whenever they do that big spread of all the Batmobiles, they'll add a Tumblr in there. That's the only thing from the movie. Well, the Tumblr and the 89 Batmobile. That's the only thing I could think of that they do.
Well, I will say thankfully no, because the DC movies have disappointed me greatly.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, that's another thing, like the synergistic thing between Nick Fury and Marvel Comics.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
How
they went from him basically drawing Samuel Jackson, yep. And then they're just like, well, why don't we just put him in a movie? It's like, yeah, that makes sense.
Well, then they replaced the main Nick Fury in comics also.
That was so... horrible the way they did that and made zero sense. When I saw that, I was like, hold up, what?
Yeah, it was so they could make it more, like I said, synergistic than anything else. But
yeah, and you could tell it's one of those things they just like, well, just do it. It's like, well, why not just take the one from the Ultimate, like you did with Miles, so why not just have it so that Miles and this Nick Fury, so you could justifiably say, well, this is a Nick Fury from over there. He's over here. Stuff got rewritten so that so we can justify him knowing a bunch of stuff. Instead of...
Well, you could even delve even deeper into it and have one of them turn into the bad guy. You could have the old Nick Fury turn into, like, maybe they weren't telling the truth about the whole time and, like, take on a new persona or what have you. There's a lot of ways you can do it in comic books. It's, but they don't ask us our opinion.
Well, so apparently they, when they do that, there's always varying degrees of success. It's like, should Robin live or die?
Yep. Well, I think that actually turned out to be the best thing, though, because Jason Todd becoming Red Hood ended up being a great thing for DC.
Yeah. It's something you keep coming across in various things. It's one of those things to where it's like every new Batman property, they're just like, are we going to get to Jason Todd? Or is this like, probably not.
Well, Jason Todd's my favorite Bat character. I understand. I mean, his anger is justified. The fact that Batman, like, the fact that he wants to murder bad guys because he's like, hey, they killed me.
Yeah.
It's only fair.
I like Jason to a point, depending on how they write him. Nightwing is personally my favorite. Nightwing is one of my favorite characters.
Okay.
I think he doesn't get enough justice, especially whenever they've done something animated. It's like they always end up pantsing him, and I was just like, but he's so great. I just like because to me I always look at Nightwing as Batman perfected. He had the trauma, he learned how to get over it and also be well adjusted. He's a very capable leader and he has the respect of pretty much the whole superhero community.
Well, the funny thing to me is, like, Batman is probably the least interesting Batman character. At least to me.
Yeah.
Have you read, are you reading the new Nightwing series with Tom Taylor?
No, but I am planning on picking it up. I have seen some of what they're doing with it. I am currently reading, I want to get into it, but I'm currently reading his original run before the new 52. And I am liking, you know, that so far. If only the art was better, but I'm just like, it is what it is. I'm just going to have to power through it.
Have you read White Knight?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, the Nightwing interaction with that one with Batgirl as they're chasing Bruce in the beginning of it.
Yeah.
Talking about how Bruce is crazy and... I don't know. Like I said, Batman is the least interesting of the Bat family to me.
Yeah, and especially when they... Because I like Batman. I like a certain type of Batman.
Okay.
I like Batman when they, because as you know, with certain characters, they never, you know, it's comics, so they you know, somebody for certain characters, they'll never let them die, and unfortunately, they also never let them grow up, which is why Spider-Man has kind of had some issues. They thought he was too old, and it's like, oh, it's nobody's gonna be able to relate to him, or, you know, him being married makes him old, or what have you. And it's just like, it's like, well, then maybe if they can't figure out how to write a story with him being married, then maybe you need to find different writers.
Yeah. It's probably going to shock you, but I actually defend One More Day as a good story. So.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, we got to get to that in a second, but I think Batman, Bruce is kind of boring when they always make him standoffish, when he's always brooding, because he's, how do you go through four Robins, what, three Batgirls, multiple other auxiliary characters, worked with multiple iterations of the Justice League and the Outsiders, but you're still a loner? Plus you have, it's like, there's certain things, it's just like, you're not a loner. And it's like, you set up multiple families and different things. And it's like, yeah, he's still going to be, I can still see him being gruff because he, he just has a different philosophy. He just has a different way of dealing with these villains. And also the fact that another thing that gets me, he is not a superhero. He is a hero. He's a vigilante. He does not have powers. And his money is not a superpower. It is a tool that he uses.
That's why I liked White Knight, the exploration of like why the Bat Universe is what it is.
Exactly. The art is also amazing.
Sean Murphy's is a fantastic fantastic artist.
Yes, he is.
Far better writer than I would have thought.
Yeah, it's rare to see that combo of being both a great, at least in Western comics, of being both a good writer and artist. Mm-hmm. But what is your when you say you defend One More Day? What is your defense of One More Day being a good story?
So I worked for Dan, the previous owner, at that time period when it came out, and people were coming in and blasting it, saying like, this is terrible, you know, this is, Peter would never do this. And it is the most Peter decision that there is. And the reason I say that is Peter Parker started being Spider-Man legitimately after Uncle Ben died. The whole reason that he was in the situation that he was during One More Day is because he made another poor decision of exposing who he was. And as a result, Aunt May was shot and in a coma and on the cusp of dying. He had exhausted everything that he could have done. He went to Doctor Strange. He went to other heroes. And all of them said there was nothing they could do. Peter was in the rock in a hard place, and he didn't even make the decision. It was Mary Jane who made the decision, and she made it for him because she knew this was a guy who could not handle being responsible for the death of not only his father figure, but his mother figure. He already, like, Uncle Ben died because of his decision. Gwen Stacy died because of his decision. This would have, like, pushed him over the edge. There's no way that he could have stayed a hero if he was also responsible for her death.
Yeah. Okay.
Psychologically, there's no other outcome.
Well, you know what? You explain it like that, I can buy that. I don't buy Reed Richards being able to make a portal that can go into a different universe.
And not be able to.
It's like that is the part that breaks it, to where it's just like, Doctor Strange, none of these super scientists, none of these people who literally have risen people from the dead and doing all this other stuff can't fix a bullet wound. A gunshot is too much for them to fix.
I understand, but that it seemed like people's argument was not that. It was that Peter wouldn't make the decision. And to me, there was no other decision that would have been made.
All right.
But bringing up Reed Richards actually makes me have a question for you. How do you feel about like Moon Girl? Because I have some thoughts about this character in particular.
I don't know too much about Moon Girl. The little I do know is that what she's supposed to be like the smartest person,
the fifth or seventh smartest person in the.
First of all, that tier list of the smartest people kills me. But yeah, it's
so this. There's always a lot of discussion around diversity in comics and characters and all that stuff. I think Marvel did that character a huge disservice by saying she was the fifth or seventh smartest person in the Marvel Universe, because you rob her of opportunities to show growth and showing her being intelligent versus just coming out and saying she is.
Kind of like how they did Riri Williams.
Exactly. I feel like you rob these characters of character moments.
And I also think there's a difference between just to say that it's like, okay, I can, and you know what, and I can accept rebuilding her own suit or whatever, because it is different. Because, and just as if, you know, just as people were upset that they said that Tom Holland was like a mini Iron Man in the MCU, and I'm just like, well, you have to look at it from the terms of in the universe he grew up in, Iron Man existed. So being a person of science, why would you not be interested in everything that he's doing? Even people who aren't, you know, nerds or whatever, you know, science type people think that that's cool. So, but when you actually understand that, why would you gravitate to stuff like that? So when these people have existed in this world for, in my head canon, at least 20 years, because in my head canon, Peter started being Spider-Man when he's 15, and he's in his early 30s. I don't like that they won't let him make that leap mentally past 30. I know they feel that that's old, but for me, it's like Peter's in his early mid 30s, you know, as long as with like people like Cyclops and different things like that. Iron Man, Steve, they're in like their 40s, whatever, something like that. Something to justify them being older and keep looking at him. Like that way they can keep looking at him like, hey, kid, whatever. Because technically they were adults when he started.
Can you give me like 2 minutes to ring up a customer?
Sure. Yeah. All right. That should give me something. Yeah. Okay. But no, yeah. What was I saying about Riri? Yeah. Like it makes sense in the world that they grew up in that they would know more than they did when they started off, because I know people like Reed and whatever, they have their stuff. But to say that because of that, that they are up there with them, and I think as you said, it does kind of rob them of the potential of getting better.
Well, character moments. I mean,
yeah,
you grow through conflict or failure. Peter Parker isn't known for his successes. He's known for all the times he dropped the ball. Like, that's the stuff that people remember.
Right. And you know what? And that does, once again, you know, and just thank you for giving me your time to, you know, have these conversations, talk to somebody who knows about these issues, or not issues, but, you know, different topics and different things. And before I let you go, I did want to talk to you about, you brought up diversity. One thing that Raven and I talk about occasionally is people, and you see it, it's one of those things to where you see a lot more on social media, and you know, people making channels and pretty much dedicating their whole channel to talk about issues that they feel come up with diversity in comics. And it's one of those things of, is it actually a big deal or as bad as they say it is, or is it just a thing that because that's all they talk about, it seems worse than what it is? Because one of the things that we say is that it does become a thing of to where they are conflating something as, well, it's bad because it's diversity, to where we're saying, well, no, it's just written bad.
So I'm in a weird middle ground, because I, like I said, I'm 46, so I see like all the different. I've seen people's different perspectives and stuff, and I'm like, I understand everybody's I try to understand everybody's perspective.
Yeah.
In terms of, I think Marvel's biggest problem in terms of the diversity thing is DC has played the legacy thing far better than they have over their existence.
Yeah.
Marvel has leaned on their characters since 1962. There was no real change, and then there was nobody like taking over for them, whereas outside of Batman and Superman, we've had different Green Lanterns, we've had different Flashes.
Yeah.
We've had like there was a feeling like a passing on to the next generation sort of thing with DC Comics. And so I think Marvel got kind of locked into their characters and not really, like you were talking about, like Peter Parker is always 30 or 28 or what have you. DC used to have that edict also. I think it was like 15 years ago that whoever was control was like, Batman's always 28. And it's like, well, that doesn't make sense. There's 4 Robins and they
right.
have all these experiences. Like, did they just like go away really quickly? And now you have the problem of like when did Bruce start adopting these kids when he was like 16? Like,
exactly. Yeah.
If you don't let him age, again, you get locked into a certain thing. But in terms of what you were saying about poorly written and stuff, I was really excited about Robbie Reyes as a character. And And don't get me wrong, I know I'm a white guy talking about this, and so, I mean, obviously my opinion is going to be different than other people's, but then I read it, and I'm like, there's immediately gang members around him, like, he's a mechanic, he drives a lowrider, and I'm like, this is all stereotypical stuff to me, and it doesn't appeal to me, like, I realize that some people are going to be like, well, that's some people's reality. And I'm sure it is some people's reality. But I feel like you're talking to a niche group at that point. And not even a niche group of Hispanic people, a niche group of Hispanic people. Like,
because that is not default Hispanic culture.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I feel that same way when I see, like, 70s books. Like, oh, this is how black people act. Or this is how... And you're like, this is stereotypical of how, like, a group thinks that black people act or black people talk or what have you. Yeah. And that's why I think, like, that's why I feel like Moon Girl was disappointing, because they came out, and like I said, they said she's the fifth or seventh smartest person. Whereas if you let her grow, I feel like you get more of a fan base through that. And I feel like you allow people to attach to it. I like to write, so I look at things from, like, that perspective, and I don't know. But that's how I feel about it. Like, but like I said, I'm sure some people will disagree and some people will agree. And
no, I can totally, you know, on that page, it does. I think that some people, creatives, they're like, okay, we have this new character, we have to make them, in order for the audience to like them, we have to make them the best. And I will make the people like them. And I should say, like, no, they don't have to be. If they're already the best, then what are we reading for them? If they're already great at this, then what's the point? I would like the angle of, and I don't know if you follow anime at all. It's like, if they do like they do with certain anime characters, they introduce a character and they think that they're the greatest. Or they have this perception of themselves of, oh yeah, I got this, and then they keep going, and then they see how much they don't know, and they see how much they do have to learn, and then it does become that thing of them starting off having a few small victories and thinking that they're awesome, then being humbled and having to, you know, work their way up.
And that's the thing, like, conflict is how you tell stories, but. So what you were just talking about, my first exposure to Black Panther was Reginald Hudlin's run on it. And I was excited about reading it. And, like, it was like a 3-issue arc, I want to say. And, like, the first issue, he was like Reginald Hudlin wrote it to where, like, he beat Captain America and, like, oh, he's the best fighter. And then the next issue, he out-invented Iron Man. He was like, oh, he's a better inventor than Iron Man. And then in the third issue, or maybe, no, he was richer than Iron Man. And then the third issue, like, he outsmarted or out-invented Reed Richards. And I was like, even if he was second best at each one of those things, that makes him a better character than all three of them, because he's more well-rounded. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like if you say somebody's perfect, you're writing them into a corner. You're not helping them. You're actually making them a weaker character.
Right. That also was... That's also was one of those things to where, because I think I want to say I recently read that run, and because I grabbed a bunch of Black Panther comics when they had a huge sale on them. I'd say sale because they were literally giving them away. And so I got, like, the Christopher Priest run. The Hudlin run, and I want to say now I have to start the Ta-Nehisi Coates run.
Okay.
Because I read all the way up. I finished Doom War.
I will tell you the John Ridley run has been great so far.
Oh, is that, and that's the one that just started, right? Okay, yeah. I'm interested in getting into that. But yeah, so it was one of those things to where if you had just finished reading this, and then you're reading Hudlin, it is one of those things where, like, okay, this contradicts a lot of what came before, and this is all supposed to be in the same, the Dora Milaje is a lot different from what they were in the Priest run, you know, they still had them, but they were more like, some of them were like underage girls, and they, you know, whatever. But yeah, it was a different thing. And I like Black Panther, and it's one of those scenes to where I am fine. He is more technological than spiritual. I am fine with him not being able to outbuild Iron Man or whatever, because he knows. Yeah, it's like he knows that stuff, but that's not, he's not the one building his tech. He has other people doing that. You know, he's smart. And it is a thing to where people don't understand. It's like there are different levels of intelligence. Like Hank Pym's intelligence is not the same as Reed's. His intelligence is more focused on these type of things, you know, with ants or different things like that, to where Tony or Reed will probably have to talk to him about something, because he knows that he understands a certain thing that they don't. On some cases, I do like the fact that when they have an issue with something that is more biological, the others, they don't deal with actually doing things with people, so they would have to go to a hero that does focus more so on that. But not yet.
And that's what I mean. Like, I feel like there was a missed opportunity there. I feel like Reginald Hudlin wanted to be like, let me show you why this character is so great. And I'm like, I feel, and like I said, I think he did it from enthusiasm and love of the character. I don't think he was trying to do anything like negative with the character, but I feel like it backfired and probably hurt the character more than it helped him.
It gets better on later on, because it does, as with Priest, it does show you the difference with Black Panther as opposed to the other heroes. Because in my mind, in the way that I've seen him written, I do not view, he's another one, I don't view, he has superpowers, but I don't view him as a superhero along the other ones, because he has a very different mindset of, like, here's a guy, and especially according to Priest run, he's like, I only joined the Avengers because I don't trust you guys, and I just joined to make sure that you weren't, that you would never become a threat to Wakanda.
Well, I will tell you, if you like that, you will love John Ridley's take on the character.
Okay, yeah. And it's like, and that is constantly, it is, there's a lot, I was not expecting the amount of political stuff involved in a Black Panther comic, which is why I do view him different from the others, because he's like, I'm not worried about, you know, purse snatchers and, you know, different things and villains of that nature. I have to worry about keeping the economy together and different tribes and different things, and just the different issues that he has to deal with that other heroes don't. And the fact that he is,
well, they're responsible for a city, he's responsible for a country.
Right. And the fact that he is, that, you know, he and Shuri will, they are not, it's not a thing of, you know, we don't kill. He's like, no, they're gonna die. It's like the whole purpose, like this, what was there's, it was in Doom War. There was these people that and finally got captured. They had some of the X-Men, and I guess it threw Nightcrawler off, to where he got them. They got into the country because they had been taken out, and they immediately killed not just the people there, but just, it wasn't a thing of, do this and we're going to kill you. It's like, no, they just killed them. And it's like, well, this is war. We don't, there is no, that whole, you know, we're holding back. It's like, no, they attacked and killed their own countrymen. They are traitors. They're going to die. And I do,
repercussions.
Right. There, and that is the thing for certain heroes. Like, I've never liked the whole aspect of Batman killing. Like, it was like, well, he did in the 89 movies. I'm like, I didn't like it then either. It's like him casually strapping a bomb on somebody and throwing him down a manhole cover. It's like, I'm not, you know, I didn't really like that.
See, I'll be honest with you. One of the things I hate about Batman is that he won't kill Joker. I think Batman is, I view Batman as a pragmatist, and to me, he would be like, killing Joker saves thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of lives. I'm willing to make that sacrifice.
For me, him not killing Joker is a character flaw of him constantly waiting for the judicial system to work itself out, to finally fix itself, because he's done his job of catching him. At this point, he catches them. He gives them to law enforcement. The fact that they keep putting him in a mental institution instead of saying, okay, no, F this. He can't stay there. Execute him. Death penalty.
Well, that's that, again, that's why I like the White Knight run with in yeah. terms of Bruce being invested into the criminal justice system.
Yeah. But yeah.
That's a whole other story.
I also think that they've overused the Joker. I am fine if they don't use him for another 5 to 10 years.
So, going back to the diversity thing, I don't know. Like I said, Joker, I do agree with you, is overplayed. But I want to go back to the diversity thing. I think one of Marvel's biggest failures of a character of the last like decade is Mosaic. One of my favorite movies is Denzel Washington's Fallen.
Fallen, that was a great movie.
And that character pretty much plays into that same thing of being able to jump from body to body. And again, like
that character came and went.
Well, they played on some stereotype to get like he was a world famous basketball player, and like, and I'm like, you know, black people do more than just play basketball.
Yeah, that's and believe it or not, it's not just other. That was another thing I had to get with reading some of the early Black Panther comics. I'm just like, some of this dialogue is rough, mm-hmm. and it's just like, wow, this is. It's like we didn't all talk like this.
Exactly.
It's like this is and especially some of it is like so slang heavy, and it's an issue I have looking at certain things, to where it's like I would like to see a movie to where, like I'm a fan of the 24 series, mm-hmm. and I like the 24 legacy. What irritated me was that the main character was black, but then it came out as like, well, his brother is like actually the leader of a gang, and he was in the gang with his brother, but then he left to join the army, became an army ranger because to get away. It's just like, how about he had a nice family, he grew up, he joined the army rangers, and then came. It's like, why does it always have to be some gang activity that mm-hmm. he had to get away from this. It was like, or he just grew up like other people and didn't, it is like you said, like that is not the experience of every black people, of every black person. And you can,
and like I said, I'm sure that some people do experience that, but yeah. from watching TV or reading comics or reading books or whatever, it's almost like they want you to believe that's everybody's experience. And
right. Yeah. And that's, it becomes an issue when that's is like as you say, like yes, that is some experience, but when it happens to be the experience of all the characters of this specific group, it does come off as I won't say disingenuous, but it does come off as kind of like, do you guys know how to write for other people?
Well, Raven and I talked about this the other week. I've never been a fan of talking about people as a block. Because people are not blocks.
Right.
Like, the black community is not like everybody believes the same thing. The Hispanic community is not everybody believes the same thing. The white community is not everybody believes the same thing. And I almost feel like it's easier for people to think like that, but it's I think it makes for weak storytelling and weak minds, but that's a whole other,
yeah. other story. Yeah, and that is something we've talked about too, to where a common phrase is we are not a monolith, like people yeah. are not monolithic. So, you know, you will have different people from different groups. It's like you brought up Robbie Reyes. It's like, yeah, that is a subsection of, you know, people who do like that, but it highlights it more when it's like, okay, all the other ghostwriters, all the ones, I guess what there's like been like three, Danny, Johnny, Danny, I think that was a female, all of them been motorcycles, yeah. And it's like, okay, well, we're going to have a guy in a car. Yeah, the Latino, and the lowrider. And it's, and it does seem like we're just like, why is this one in a car?
Yep, exactly.
You know? And it does come off as weird, and it does come off as a certain thing But at the same time, you do have it on the other hand, to where you have people of a certain community, and you don't have, there are certain things that does make it seem authentic, to where you don't have, to where it's like, okay, this is clearly from somebody not of that community, who haven't talked to anybody of that community, so it does come off as kind of,
well, I know he's persona non grata now, but when I grew up, you know, we watched The Cosby Show, and I still remember back then also that there was a segment of the black community that was like, this isn't realistic either, like the black doctor and the black lawyer, and I was like, I don't think everything has to be the same. Like, different people do have different experiences, and for me, like, I loved Different Strokes growing up. I loved Good Times. I loved What's Happening. I loved The Cosby Show, and all of them seem to have different perspectives on, like, the experience. Like, it wasn't just one type of person. I don't know. I feel like it's gotten actually worse in terms of that stuff and things, in terms of how things are presented. But
I think the issue with that is that sometimes they pat themselves too hard on the back saying, hey, look what we did. Instead of just saying, it's like there was never a time, at least I can't remember, in the Cosby's, at least to where they just sat down and told you to your face, hey, we're a successful black family and doing this. It's like, no, they just did it. And I enjoyed that. And I prefer that. It's like, and there's different things that they can put in there that does make it feel authentic, that, you know, somebody, a black family, can relate to in an issue. But I also think that it is good. It's for diversity as a thing. Like, no, because a lot of black people don't see themselves in this thing. That's why they view it as, oh, that's not real. It's like, no, this is something that can actually happen. And once that you see it, you can now visualize it, be like, oh, this can be something I can aspire to. That is why I do like seeing more diverse characters.
There was an episode of Cosby Show where they did the riddle of, like, I think it was a son and his dad were in an accident. His dad is a doctor. The son was in an accident, and the father, I don't know what it was, but the idea was, so who operated on the kid? And because he said, I can't operate on this kid because this is my son. And they were like, well, you said the father's dead. And they were there like, well, what's the answer? What's the answer? And it's that the mom was the doctor. And it's, again, building that up, like, yeah, why can't the mom be a doctor? Obviously, this was like 40 years ago where it was a little different. But, you know, by telling people, like, there's no reason why this can't be, I think you help people more than just saying, like, this is how everything is.
Right.
But, and I don't know. I probably didn't probably vocalize that the best way, but
I understand what I mean. I got your point. But no, and it is, like her and I are talking, it is a thing of, like, people saying, they're saying, like, oh, they're taking over, to where it's just like, no, they're not. The overwhelming majority of your heroes, male and female, are, you know, straight white people. It's like, you're not losing out on anything. And if somebody's one character, just wait a minute, because you know that hero's going to come back. Jane being Thor is not the first time that somebody other than Odinson has been Thor. Yeah. It will go back. You know. You know.
But actually, my question is why should it necessarily go back? And I'm not even saying that I'm necessarily a fan of Jane Foster being Thor, but again, I go back to the DC legacy thing. I feel like you move time better and you allow each generation to have their own version of the hero if another person takes over. But again, that's just my viewpoint. Jane Foster doesn't have to speak to me. She needs to speak to the next generation of collector or whatever. So I still have my Thor. Like, my Thor didn't go anywhere. Like,
and I think that is one thing that people, you know, that some of the people who do have an issue with it is like, they, I guess they feel like they're losing something. Or it's the thing, as I say, it's like, it doesn't speak to them. It's like, and I said, like, it doesn't have to. It's like, not everything has to speak directly to you. And that can be okay. It's like, you don't have to read it. Like, that's why I saw this one thing where people saying, oh, we're, you know, they're shoving so-and-so down our throat. It's like, you don't have to watch it or read it. It can be over there, and it'll be just fine.
Well, we had this discussion a couple of months back. I do feel Miles will hit a ceiling unless they take Peter Parker off the board, like, because he will always be in Peter's shadow.
Yeah.
I think they almost have to take Peter off the board at some point in order to allow Miles to really find his own voice.
They will burn Marvel down before they allow them to remove Peter, mainstream Peter, 616 Peter, from the comics before they, you know, before they allow it to happen.
Do you understand what I'm saying, though? That, like, he has a ceiling because of...
Yeah, especially the fact that he's in the main universe. Mm-hmm. I think they would probably almost have to bring back the Ultimate Universe, and just even if they brought back the Ultimate Universe just for his comic alone, which I think that just as it did beforehand, Ultimate Spider-Man can hold up that universe by itself. Mm-hmm. And because he is, you know, well, even they brought back that Peter Parker, but then he went away, and Miles was the one Spider-Man.
So my son watches Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, the Disney Plus, or the Disney show that's on now.
CG one.
Yeah, they saddled Miles with a terrible name of Spin, and I'm like,
right, yes, and they did that. I want to say the Ultimate Spider-Man show they had.
Okay.
They did that too, and I want to say he came up. Yeah, they've had two animated Spider-Man shows produced by Marvel, both of them just to where they do the have the thing of, and it's another thing of them rushing because they're putting too much, and it's like, well, he's still a teenager. Peter Parker is still a teenager, and then you're also introducing Miles. It's like, so you're not giving Miles a chance to be, he is just, they're not going to call them both Spider-Man, so you come up with some crappy name, and then once again you dilute it, and they do the thing to where they make Peter started off, but then they have to make Peter look bad in some way in order to make them look good, because they can't just have them look good. Exactly. And still, and it becomes a thing of like, well, you just don't have them, like, just don't have them in there. They don't have to be there. Unless it's like, if you want to actually have them in there, they don't have Peter at all. Because they do have a series, what I want to say is called Marvel Rising, to where it's mm-hmm. Spider-Gwen and other characters. And it's like, I don't watch it. It's like, but it's like, that's better because she doesn't have to share the screen with, you know, other spider-powered people. And, you know, you don't have to come up with different, you know, she could just be whoever.
Well, I mean, if they wanted to do... Like you were just saying, they could have where Peter Parker disappeared from the city and these two are filling in the gap, and like, where'd Peter go, and leave it as a mystery kind of thing.
The Miles Morales Spider-Man game did that pretty well. Peter left. He's like, I'm leaving for a minute. You're in charge of the city. And just, you know.
But I do think Spin is a terrible name.
Spin, I want to say they had Spidey. For me, I'm just like, okay, make him the new Iron Spider. Because I want to say, yeah, there's the one point to where his uncle steals it and changes it to black and gold. I'm like, okay, he knows Riri. He's been on a team with her. So it's like, hey, you know, because that sweatsuit and jeans and thing he has is awful. I don't know why. Of all the people you know, why stick with that? But anyway, but yeah, just be like, hey, I know my uncle had this. Can you reverse engineer it and get me my own version of that? And they could combine that with his black and red design. And he's the new Iron Spider. You're not using the name. He can have it. He's even more separated from Peter in the fact that his suit is more advanced. He has the... You can have him getting used to the spider arms or whatever. And just do that. instead of, you know, being like, who's you know, the different Spider-Man, whatever, that Spider-Man joke that they keep doing in the comics.
It, like I said, we've had this discussion as to whether he's hit a, whether there's a glass ceiling for how far you can go with Peter on the board, and I don't know. I feel like they almost have to remove him in order for there to be growth to the character, but
yeah,
that's my viewpoint. Like, I agree with you that they see too much money in Peter to do that, but
yeah,
it is what it is.
Yeah. Because you, and you can also see the same, like, because they recently had Captain. They recently had Sam. Jesus Christ, Sam become Captain America again. Mm-hmm. And it was almost like they kind of make a big deal about it. But I was like, they did that before. They each had their own separate Captain America book. You know, then it became, you know, the whole thing with them. And My only issue that was that I didn't like how they did kind of, Sam had a new status. He led, you know, separate different Avengers teams. He was Captain America. In my opinion, he was Captain America better than Bucky was. Bucky seemed like he was always kind of hesitant to actually be Captain America. He seemed like he had kind of had a mantle, but not the role, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But I never liked the fact that it's just like, okay, he was Cap, he had this big thing, okay, we're gonna restart the Avengers, you know, doing all this, and I'm just like, I feel like Falcon should be on the team. He should have been in, like, that Jason Aaron's team. I know he had his own book that, you know, eventually was canceled, but it's like, hey, I chose you to be Cap because I trusted you. I think you did great, all this. I'm starting Avengers. You're not on it, though. But, you know, good job. It's like, I feel like it's kind of weird to me whenever they do this. It's like, we're starting a new version of the team. This person arbitrarily isn't a part of it.
Did you read United States of Captain America?
No, I did not. I heard about it, though.
I feel like that was another missed opportunity on their part, because I feel like they should have used diverse viewpoints, like more conservative and more liberal and more moderate, and shown how, like, a different how a single symbol can mean different things to multiple people.
Right.
And worked outward from that. But
I think their only conservative Captain America is John Walker. Yeah. And his default is, oh, he's an asshole.
Yeah.
It's just like, how about somebody who has more conservative views that is not an a-hole? How about we do that?
Exactly. I feel like the diversity in comics people would be a little less combative if there were more to like that also.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how to, you can't make everybody happy. That's the
you would never make. You would fail, and the problem with that is when you try to make everybody happy, you end up making nobody happy because you end up making a watered down product.
Exactly.
And it's not, you know, I'd rather make something that I can stand by and that, you know, makes sense in the world that I am writing for. And it's like, well, I didn't like that. It's like, it happens. There are award-winning authors who have written great stories. Like, I know Tom King is divisive, but he has written some great stories. Other stories, not so much. And yeah,
Vision was really well done.
Yeah. You know,
Heroes in Crisis made me sad. It made me want to stop reading comics.
I told Raven about that. She got mad at me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like,
Wally West is my favorite Flash, so
yeah, I'm a fan of Wally too, and I didn't realize, and that was before I realized, it's like, oh, this Flash is different from the one that I watched in the 90s show. This is Wally. Okay, cool. And I think, and just like John Stewart, my sister doesn't read comics, but when they made the Green Lantern movie, she was just like, how come they, why, where's the black guy? She's like, this was the other Green Lantern.
So that's the thing. Like, all the kids growing up on JLA know John Stewart. They don't know Hal Jordan or any of the rest of them.
Yeah. And that's the thing. She's older than me. She's like, you know, I was put her age up there, but she's older than me. I'm 36. She's older than me. She's, you know, close to 40. And it's like, and she, like I said, she didn't pay attention to the internet, but she knew about it from seeing it. And there was a thing of, like, that was in that consciousness, and there wasn't a Hal Jordan-centric show until the CGI one, which was also pretty good. I wish they would have promoted that more. But yeah, and so it was...
I'm not going to lie. I hate Hal Jordan. I hate that they returned him to... I felt like he was a better villain, like, during the 90s than he was ever a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
I can rail on that for hours, so we won't go down that route.
No, we won't go down that. But no, I've actually kept you longer than what I've meant to. But I appreciate you so much for giving me the time. Maybe another time we can hop on and talk about some other things, other you know, character specific things. But I appreciate you so much. Let people know where they can find you if they're so inclined.
Oh, we're in Frederick, Maryland, and we're in Walkersville, Maryland. We've been in business for 40 years, and, you know, plan on being around for another 40. So,
all right. And once again, that is Brainstorm Comics and Games. You can find me, Bold Expressions, on both Twitter and Instagram. Bold Expressions, BLD Expressions. Once again, Bold Expressions, BLD Expressions, on both Twitter and Instagram. If you want to shoot me an email, Bold Expressions Podcast, the number 4@gmail.com. You can watch me on this and other things, other shorter form podcasts, Random Thoughts, on Bold Expressions Podcast on YouTube. Have a good day, good morning, good evening, whenever you're listening to or watching this. And as always, don't be so busy proving your point that you forget your purpose. Thank you for listening to this episode all the way to the end. I appreciate your patronage, but I would also love it if you would check out these other great podcasts as well.
Hello, 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 you guys. This is Melodic. If you haven't paid attention, I've been on Bold Expressions with your guy Carl for a few episodes now. But if you want to hear a little bit more of the content that I have to offer, stop by my podcast, Soapbox Off, where I come with hard-hitting topics that are jaw-dropping, thought-provoking, and thought-challenging. So make sure you come with your emotions on neutral and your critical thinking on high. We talk about things from politics, from just present issues that we discuss, even a little bit on the entertainment piece as well. And once a month, I do a true crime piece just to kind of keep things different. So I hope you enjoy, and I'm gonna let you get back to the show.